Hello, and welcome to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show, prescribing hope for healthy families here on American Family Radio. Here's your host, Professor, Pediatric Nurse Practitioner, and Mom of Four, Dr. Jessica Peck.
Well, hello, friends, and happy Friday, or Fri-yay, as my kids like to say. No matter what your job is or what your plans are, there is just something that feels better about Friday, just kind of a different change in the pace. And I hope that you have fun plans with your family tonight or whatever you're going to do. I hope that you have fun plans this weekend. And today is, as every Friday is, Ask Dr. Nurse Mama Friday, where I answer your questions that you have. I wish so much that I could answer every question that you have, but I am choosing the burning questions, the ones that are coming to me most often. And on the slate for today is some questions about technology boundaries in your house, and some questions about graduation, and questions on how do we raise resilient kids in a world that just seems determined to come at them and discourage them and make us feel like this is just a terrible time to be growing up? You know, I just fight against those messages. God has put your children in your family for such a time as this, and He will equip you and encourage you to do exactly what you need to do to be not a perfect parent, but the perfect parent for your child, which is so, so, so important. So if you've been following along since January, you know that I have challenged you to adopt 52 habits for healthy parenting. Everybody wants this quick fix. You want an app, you want a life hack. But the truth is that good parenting comes from daily consistency. And those practices are just so important for us to adopt as parents. And over time, if we give ourselves grace and space for the journey, then that is going to be really helpful. So let's do a quick review. We're in week 20 of this year. Can you believe it? Because that means we're almost halfway through the year. And then that means, yep, here I go again. We'll be closer to Christmas than we're far away. I know I cannot get over my obsession with Christmas. You're just going to have to accept it as one of my faults. Those of you after Thanksgiving people are cringing right now. I love you anyway. It's all going to be okay. But let's take a moment here at week 20 and go back really quickly and do a self-assessment and see how are these things in your life. Now, if you've been following along, great. Take this quiz. If you haven't, it's just a great time to take some self-inventory and think, how and when am I doing these things? Because I'm telling you, these are the evidence-based, research-supported faith activities, just good habits that are research proven to strengthen your family. Are you ready for this quiz? Okay, here we go. Week one is pray. Are you praying on a daily basis? Whatever that looks like for you, praying with your family, praying as you're driving, getting up in the morning, praying at night, praying throughout the day. Are you regularly praying for your kids? Are you memorizing scripture and speaking that scripture over them? Are you memorizing new scriptures that you didn't know before? Are you plugged into a local church? Do you attend regularly? Are you engaged and plugged in? Do you have a church family? Are you regularly listening to Christian music or Christian radio here at AFA? Music really sets the heart and the tone and the posture for our attitude. Are you listening to Christian music and playing that in your car as you're driving in the minivan full of goldfish to sports practice? Or maybe you're one of those that you're past that stage and your car is relatively clean. I'm just now starting to get to that stage. Number five is practicing gratitude, vitamin G. Are you intentionally being grateful, whether that's through a journal or sitting with your family every day and saying something that you're grateful for? Are you working gratitude into your prayers? When you speak with your family, number six, do you listen with your face? Do you give them your whole face? Do you make eye contact for 20 seconds or more to help their brain release oxytocin? Are you listening with your face when your family speaks to you? Number 7, do you have a bedtime routine? I don't care if your kids are toddlers or teens, or if you're a grown adult in your house by yourself, you need a bedtime routine. Do you have a specific routine that does not involve your phone to help you get ready for bed? Number 8 is sleep hygiene. Again, those are simple practices like making your bed every day and making sure your phone is not right by your bed. And are you practicing good sleep? Are you getting good REM sleep? Because that impacts our attitude severely. My kids can tell you a sleep-deprived mama is not nearly as patient as a mama who has gotten the adequate sleep. Number 9 is a daily devotional. Whatever that looks like for you, something that's biblically based, that's doctrinally sound, do you have a daily devotional that you're doing, whether that's an app? See, here you go. Here's the, for those of you who want the app, this is where the app comes in. Do you have a daily devotional that you're doing? And don't tell me you don't have time to do it, because just like you, I get my smartphone notification on Sunday mornings walking into church. It's told me how much time I've spent on my phone. I have 5 minutes for a devotional. Number 10, a morning routine. Are you setting your family up for success? Are you running around like chickens with your head cut off? Do you have a dedicated morning routine, even if that's really simple? Number 11, are you playing together as a family? Are you just stuck in the rat race where you're just running to this, running to that, doing all the business of family? Are you taking time to play together? Number 12, words of affirmation. Do you give your kids and your spouse and whoever is living in your home, do you give them intentional, specific words of praise, telling them that you're praising their character traits more than their accomplishment? Number 13, writing letters. Do you regularly write letters to your family? Just telling them specifically what you love about them. There are so many things you can do. I'll talk a little bit more about legacy letters later in the program and give you some specific ideas. We're rounding the corner here to number 20. We're at 14. Do you regularly have family dinner together? I'm not talking jazz music and candles. I'm talking peanut butter and jelly and eye contact and how was your day and gathering together, saying a prayer of gratitude. Are you regularly having family dinner at least 3 nights a week? Are you giving generously? Are you tithing to your local church? Do you give to other organizations? Do you give of your time to volunteer? Families who serve together stay together. So that's something to think about. Number 16, prioritizing family time. Look at your calendar, look at your credit card. Do those tell the story that you're prioritizing family time? Because we can say that we are, but if you went to court and they opened those two things, would you have the data to back you up? Number 17 is modeling your faith. Openly talking about your spiritual journey with your kids, letting them see you pray, letting them see you read your Bible, letting them see your devotional on your nightstand, whatever that is, those spiritual disciplines, modeling your faith. Number 18 was watching faith-based films with your kids. Do you watch media together that's uplifting, that's inspiring, and talk about the themes in those stories? Number 19, last week we talked about regular gatherings with family. Now more than ever, kids need family, and whatever that family looks like to you, whether it's your church family or your family, that's your friends and family you've put together, are you doing that? So how are you doing? We have arrived, my friends, at number 20. And this week, we've been talking this week about tech-free zones. Now we're starting to head into summer. And for those of us with kids at home, this is a point where parents start off with the best of intentions. And we say, all right, we are going to have phone-free time, phone-free days. We're going to, you know, go to the park and have this picnic and have this learning experience and have this wonderful family time. And then, you know, by the end of June, we're like, the smartphone is your mother now. Like, just take it. Just take the screen time. I need peace and quiet. And so I'm going to talk today about some things that we can do and some specific things you should be thinking about in your home for tech boundaries. But first, I want to read to you a part of an email I got from a listener and who has a question and a great point. And I'm going to talk about that with tech boundaries. So this is from a dad who says, "Hi, your show is one of my favorites of the daily AFR programs." Well, thank you very much, sir. We really appreciate that, being new to AFR. But he goes on to say, "I just realized as I was listening to your program that we often focus on the issues with our kids. However, maybe we should be looking at analyzing ourselves and our spouse's traits and genetics, which would explain a lot about kids' inherent behavior." And he goes on to say, "The one common denominator should be instilling honesty, respect, integrity, and being Christ-like." He learned that in upwards basketball, which my kids have played upwards basketball. What a great experience that was. And so I just wanted to thank this dad for taking the time to send in an email and to say, you're absolutely right. So much of parenting is putting a mirror up and looking back at ourselves. Because all of us who have kids, our kids know how to push our buttons, and they have traits that drive us crazy. Now, I'm just being real here, but here's the even more real thing. If you think about that one thing your kid does that drives you crazy, if you're really honest, or if you're too afraid to be honest, you can ask your spouse. They probably get it from you because kids do what we do and they do what they see. And a lot of times that particular character trait can be so grating to us because it is grating to us. We don't like that struggle that we have. We know the emotions and the barriers that it gives us, and we don't want to see that in our kids. But here's the thing, you know, if your child is speaking disrespectfully to you, it's not always the case, but the first thing you should do is hold up a mirror and think, am I speaking disrespectfully to my spouse? Am I speaking disrespectfully to my children? If they, you know, are just getting up from the table really quickly, not giving family time, feeling like nothing else is more important than whatever is on their phone, are we demonstrating those behaviors ourselves? So that's the first thing you should do whenever your kid is having a specific struggle. You need to think about, am I doing that myself? So let me stop here for just a second before I get to tech boundaries, because when we start doing that, we can see that our kids usually have a singular behavioral struggle. There's one thing that we're going to fight about, whether that's a messy room, whether that's a bad attitude, whether that is poor effort on schoolwork, whatever it is, there's a struggle. And we have struggles too. There are things I am struggling with right now that I'm working on my character. My husband would probably be all too happy to tell you, oh yes, I see those struggles. But here's the key, parents. We cannot let a singular behavioral struggle define the totality of our child's character. I'm going to say that again. Don't let a singular behavioral struggle define the totality of your child's character. We have really great kids who sometimes make poor choices. You are really great parents who sometimes make poor choices. So do you struggle with this? Here's some telltale signs. If you find yourself saying things like, why are you always so, fill in the blank? Why don't you ever? Why do you have to be so, fill in the blank? Why can you never? Why do you have to be? These are signs that we are generalizing a behavioral struggle and projecting them into a character trait. And guess what? Our kids adopt that identity almost immediately. They think, oh, I'm lazy. I'm selfish. I'm a liar. Whoa, let's back it up. We have great kids with a struggle. We do not need to assassinate their character. That is really hard. And you know, I struggle with this. Even we do this in the toddler years of potty training. Like, why can you never? Or even the teen years, or even adult years when our kids don't come home when we want them to, when they don't call as often as we want them to. And we tend to use words like, why do you always? So we need to project confidence that our kids will get past this. We can say, you're a great kid with a little struggle. You're a great child. You're a great spouse with just this little struggle. In those seasons, we need to intentionally praise any small little thing you can in the interim and talk about that. So when we come back, I'm going to talk about some specific boundaries that we can have. And then I've got some advice for all the mamas with the seniors who are graduating and pretty much any stage of transitioning. We will talk about that before I answer some questions about resilience. Don't go away, y'all. It's Friday. Stay with me. I'll see you on the other side of this break. Last year, because of you, Preborn's network of clinics saw over 58,000 babies saved. Thank you to all who made this possible. Let's celebrate these precious babies. Daisy and her husband had decided they never wanted kids, and when she found out she was pregnant, she immediately thought abortion. But after she and her husband met her baby on ultrasound and heard the heartbeat, their hearts melted and they chose life. Her baby Jeffrey is healthy and beautiful, and Daisy and her husband can't even imagine life without him. Each of these babies are truly miraculous, and every day, Preborn celebrates 200 miracles. $28 a month can be the difference between the life and death of a child. When a mother meets her baby on ultrasound and hears their heartbeat, it's a divine connection that doubles a baby's chance at life. Let's join together and help mothers choose life. Just dial pound 250 and say the keyword baby. That's pound 250 baby, or visit preborn.com. That's preborn.com. If you do not have that song on your playlist, you are missing out, friends. Get that song on your playlist. It's Melody Malone, and I've witnessed it. I'm sitting here with goosebumps. I love this song because it has such a foundational truth. And sometimes when we're in a tough place, when we're in a moment of struggle, we can think, oh my goodness, is this ever going to end? Has God forgotten me? And we can look back and see his faithfulness and know that I have witnessed those things. I witnessed God bring life, and that he is restored, that he is forgiven, he has redeemed, all of those things. So let me tell you, if you need a pickup after the show is over, don't do it right now, but do it after the show is over. Go play that song. It is a great pick-me-up. Well, listen, friends, it's Ask Dr. Nurse Mama Friday. I'm answering some of your questions, and had just shared with you an email from a dad where we're talking about how when our kids do things that drive us crazy, we first have to assess ourselves. Now, that's not always the case. Sometimes you can look at yourself and say, you know what? I'm doing pretty good. This is all you. But a lot of times it is not. So I want to go back to a couple of concepts that I've talked about before, but it's just a good time for a reminder. The first thing that I want to talk about is fubbing. That's phone snubbing. Phone snubbing your kids. We are terrible at this collectively as parents, and we are defensive and we say that we're not. And there are a few of you who are really good at not doing this. And I, with all sincerity, salute you right now. Like, good, share your secrets and continue to model that behavior. That is a guilt prompt for the rest of us because we need it. But so much of what our kids are wanting is our time and our attention. Now, a lot of times you don't feel that way with your teenagers. You think, no, they don't want to talk to me. I can't get their face out of their phone. But they just need some time to build trust. We feel the same way when our kids are being kind of difficult. And then all of a sudden, you know, they come up to us and they say, hey, mom, how was your day? You're immediately thinking, I know, y'all are all saying it collectively here on the radio. What do you want? Well, you know what? Our kids think the same thing about us. When all of a sudden we've decided, they don't know that we've just had a guilt trip in our head, and we think, oh, I've been grumpy the last few days. I have really not been on my A game. I'm really going to try. They don't see that. They just see, what do you want? What do you want me to do? What is coming next? And we just have to be the adults in that situation and lean in. And even if they reject us, even if they think we're sus, that means suspicious. Did you hear my kids cringe when I just used Gen Z vernacular? I'm sorry, kids, really, I am. I know the words. I know I'm not supposed to use them in a sentence for real, but that is the case. So listen, how many times have you been at a kid's sporting event where all you see is the tops of parents' heads? You don't see them engaged in real life. You see them engaged in online life. So let me give you a couple quick facts about fubbing. That is phone snubbing. It decreases eye contact, decreases oxytocin production, which is a natural God-given advantage we have to make our kids feel bonded to us. Even the mere presence of a phone during conversation, the number one response that gives in kids when they research it is disrespect. They disrespect us when they do that. They feel disconnected. It decreases a sense of belonging. It increases loneliness. It negatively impacts self-esteem. It promotes discontentment and negatively impacts digestion at a meal. And it makes you think less of others and see them as rude and insensitive. So it's so important, parents, first for us to put our phones down when our kids want our attention. The next thing that we have to know is, what are those tech-free times and tech-free zones? Everybody at every stage of life needs some tech-free time, and you need a tech-free zone. So I'll give you some examples of what that is in our house. And listen, it's okay to set boundaries. If you don't have these before and you want to do them again, let your kids be angry. Let your kids complain. Let them tell you how this is going to just basically end all happiness as they know it. And just be confident in being the parent. And I've said this before too, but as unofficial, just from the home of Jessica, I tell them, I am older than you. I'm wiser than you. I have more resources than you. I have more money than you. I have more friends than you. I have more life experience than you. I have more skin in this game. And so if you want to do this the hard way, go ahead, but I will win. That's what I tell them. But listen, what are your tech-free times? Our tech-free times are when we designate that as a family. We'll say, we're going to have a tech-free night. We're going to do this, and everybody put your phones away. In the summertime, we have a little cardboard box that we put them in, and we chart the time, how much time we have gotten back as a family. And let me tell you, it feels really, really good. And you might even incentivize this, like make, once we get to 10 hours that we've earned back as a family, you'll get this, treat yourself, treat your family to something fun, to some kind of reward to incentivize yourself to have those tech-free times. Tech-free zones in my house are non-negotiable. That is my kids' bedrooms. We check in phones at night, which is really, really important to do. Other tech-free zones I have are the car. I have a captive audience in the car. I do not want my kids to be plugged in on their phone or their earbuds, earpods, ear. I always say this wrong, but whatever they're listening to in their ears, those are our tech-free zones that we have. And then even sometimes, you know, one of the habits we talked about was watching media together as a family. Media in and of itself is not necessarily a bad thing, but it's really frustrating when you look around and you see you're trying to watch a movie together and everybody's just on their own screen. We want to all experience the same adventure together and then talk about it. Another non-negotiable for me is the table. We have no phones at the table. And because we involved our kids on this, they will be the first to call us out. They will say, no phones at the table. And they delight in doing that. So I encourage you to really think this summer about, what are your tech-free times and tech-free zones? And it's not about being the phone police or being the technology police. Parents, we have to provide compelling alternatives for that tech time. Now, what does that compelling alternative look like? I'll tell you what it doesn't look like. It doesn't look like taking them to do something wild or expensive or Instagrammable. They want simple connection and relationship with us. It may take you a little time to build trust to get there if you're not there, but they just want to be invited into our lives. So I think about, you know, when my kids go and visit their grandparents, they sit at the table and they talk and they play cards. We play gin rummy. I'm good at it. Okay. So I hear my sister-in-law's telling me, no, you're not. So we're very competitive and it's fun to play together, to play games. If I put out a puzzle, then they'll come and they'll do a puzzle with me. If I'm going on a walk, I say, hey, come and go on a walk with me. I really value your company. I want to be with you. Try to do things with them that they want to do. Ask them, what would you ask me to do with you if you knew I wouldn't say no? And if that's, you know, maybe a video game, maybe that's your family, or maybe that's, let me make you a new social media profile or paint with me, or whatever that is, engage in what they love to do. And that is a great way to build relationships. And the other thing that I want to talk about is something called sharenting. Now, this is sharing your parenting online. And as we get to those moments of transition, we're thinking of tech, but we're also thinking about just all of these moments of parenting. And we don't really give posting about our kids on social media much thought. We might vent frustrations we have about teen drama or about those tough early days of parenting that are so tiring. Or maybe we have relief over being kid-free for the moment, or you ask advice on personal struggles, or you talk about, you know, how you feel about your teen dating or driving. These things are called sharenting. Now, social media is a reality of 21st century parenting, and it's a great way to connect and to seek support. But think about this. When we think about social media, M-E-D-I-A, it's not about me, M-E, as a parent. Here's the thing, parents. You are the literal caretaker of your child's permanent digital footprint. That's you. One day, they're going to go back and look at everything you have posted, and they will see themselves through your eyes, and they will read the story that you have written about them. What will they see? Will they see a narrative that conveys approval only through accomplishments? Like you only post about when they win something, when they do something really good? Will they just see dirty laundry that's aired about conflict in your relationships? Will they see a parade of embarrassing moments? That is a big responsibility. So I encourage you parents to think before you post. It is okay to be authentic and vulnerable, but ask yourself, is this story the right story to preserve in the chapter I'm writing? Am I posting in love, or am I posting in a negative emotion like anger or frustration? Ask yourself, can we laugh about this in years to come? And is this a moment I want to preserve forever? So in talking about tech boundaries, I always ask my kids permission to post photos of them on my own social media. I don't post them publicly on my social media, but on private social media, I'll ask them. I want them to feel good about what I post, and I want my narrative to be in sync with their self-image and the image that I am trying to raise them to adopt. So sometimes our posts can create pressure to live up to the image that we are crafting for them. And it is such a big privilege to have, and it's a joy to be able to tell our children's stories. So think about, what are those boundaries and what you're sharing about your kids? Now, sometimes some social media settings have things that you can post, and you can make the audience only me and say, okay, I want to preserve this as a moment in time. But think about who your audience is for. Is this for your friends, or is this for everybody to look at? Those are important ways that we can model as parents good digital citizenship. So just as a reminder, we are the caretaker of our child's permanent digital footprint. And one day they will read the story of your life just as you have written it. Be a kind author and write a masterpiece for them. This can be so hard when we start looking at pictures. And I know for graduation, a lot of you are starting to look back through either if it's a kindergarten graduation or an eighth grade middle school graduation or high school or college, you look back through all of those photos that you have. And it can be really, really hard because you look at them and you see so many moments of parenting that you really cherished, that are really, really nostalgic. And that can be a thing that just brings back a lot of memories. And maybe, you know, if you're a parent of older kids, you see all of these other parents posting their pictures and you think, oh, I wish I was in that stage of parenting. Their problems were more simple then. Oh, I was the hero of their story then. That was a better stage of parenting. They loved me. You know, I was welcome in their life. And that can be really, really hard. But we have to be really careful not to give our kids the message that we love a younger version of who they used to be more than who they are becoming. This is so hard to do. And, you know, you especially for those of you who have high school seniors, you think about, you know, again, there's those days when they still actually gave you hugs in public. I know, in fact, you know, really gave you more than enough hugs that you needed in public. And when their biggest problem was a temper tantrum in the grocery store, I mean, that is really, really hard. But as our kids age, especially in those preteen and teen years, they already feel awkward in their own bodies, and junior high especially doesn't recall fond memories for almost everyone. It's a time when you find it hard to love yourself, much less believe you're loved by anyone else. And as our kids go on to high school, they are scared to death to go to college or to take a job or whatever they might be doing. And by the way, let me just address for those high school seniors who are not going to college. It is such an easy thing for us to do as any other human beings who's talking about this. Instead of saying, hey, you're graduating, saying, where are you going to college? Just say, hey, tell me about your plans. That is such an easy thing that we can all do. So that, because there are some kids who will go to college. There are some kids who will take a job. There are some kids who are taking a gap year. Some kids who are figuring out still what they need to do. Some kids that have different family situations or financial situations. We don't know everything behind what kids are doing, but I'm telling you, you would cause so much grace and gratitude in the heart of parents if you would just say, tell me about your plans. What do you plan to do? Instead of asking specifically, where are you going away to college, which can just be really hard and feel like all of a sudden they're having to explain or defend their choice, and we wouldn't want to do that. But listen, our kids should never feel guilty for growing up. Our kids should never feel like we love a younger version of them more. Our kids should never feel like we long for the good old days of parenting. Our kids should never feel like this stage of parenting is disappointing and undesirable. Those early parenting days are physically exhausting. The teen parenting days are emotionally exhausting. Parenting quasi-adults and adults, it's confusing. But all of those stages require your most valuable commodity, your time. And we can enjoy the past and use it to celebrate the future and always give our kids the message that we love every stage. We love seeing them grow. We love who they used to be, but we love even more who they're becoming. So let's celebrate those today. When we come back, we'll talk more about this and some resilience. Don't go away. I'll be right back.
Oops, there's a piece I missed a little bit.
Grandpa, why do we always pick up litter when we go hiking?
Well, we're just making it nicer for people who come after us a little bit. It's called stewardship.
My grandfather taught me that you should always leave a place better than you found it. That it's important to invest in the lives of your children and grandchildren, leaving them with a godly legacy they can build on. That's why I decided to set up a charitable gift annuity with the AFA Foundation.
It's called stewardship.
I know that my gift will support a ministry that honors the biblical principles I hold dear. And it's a way to invest in the future of our country. The AFA Foundation also arranged for me to have a steady fixed income, so I don't have to worry in the midst of changing times.
Call the AFA Foundation today to find out how you can set up a charitable gift annuity. Just call 800-326-4543, extension 345.
Welcome back, friends. That's exactly what we've been talking about today. Our sins are many. As parents, we're not perfect, not even by a long shot. And in this world that tells us we need to be perfect, or that we're less than because we're not perfect, or this family looks like they're perfect, and why is my family struggling? We're all struggling. We all have seasons of struggle. We all have ways that we are not perfect. And our kids are not perfect. And that is okay, because you are coming today and listening to programs like this. And I know you're trying. And God's grace, His mercy is more. We need that every morning. So I want to just rest assured, when you mess up as a parent, there is grace for you. Just acknowledging that, saying, I messed up, and telling your kids, I'm so sorry for doing this. Will you please forgive me? I have found that kids are much more forgiving than adults are. And my kids will often be the first to throw their arms around my neck and say, of course I forgive you. And I think, okay, but I'm just going to feel bad and beat myself up about this for three more days. But okay, thank you very much for your forgiveness. But listen, we're talking about graduation and parenting stages. And this is one of the biggest pieces of advice I got from a mentoring mama in my life, who told me to enjoy every stage, to celebrate every stage. Never let our kids think that one stage of parenting was more desirable than another, because they look back and they think, oh, you loved that kid. You loved me before I was awkward and got braces, or sassy and disrespectful, or went off and left you because I have my own family. We need to make sure that we love the younger versions of who they used to be just as much as who they are becoming. Now, I am halfway through launching my nest. I have two that I've sent to college. I have two that I will have to send to college. I was kind of grateful to be in an off year, but as I was sitting in church in the senior Sunday, darn it, I got teary just looking at the slideshow, knowing, oh my goodness, it's coming. It is coming, because it is so bittersweet. So let me talk specifically to high school graduating families for just a minute. And, you know, I think about when my first was there, I went to parent orientation, which, if you think about it, that's such a great term, because it is so disorienting in that stage of life. So having that orientation was really helpful. And being in a transitional phase and looking at where we are. But for those of you who have kids who are graduating, here is what I wish someone had told me before my first graduated. First of all, it's way harder than people say it is, even when they tell you it's really, really hard. It's like standing still and smiling while someone rips your heart out of your chest, and you just have to pretend it's fine. It's fine. This is all fine. That's the brutal truth. So it's important to allow space for everyone to adjust at their own pace, in their own space. And this could be true for a high school graduate, or if you have a kid who's going off to kindergarten, or if you have a kid who's moving away. Accept emotions as they come. Recognize that you're human, and just do the next right thing, sometimes in the hour ahead, rather than anticipating the what-ifs that are 3 weeks down the road because we start getting in panic mode. These are really big transitions that are best taken in little steps. So give everyone grace and space to be human. You will waste way too much time wondering what someone else is thinking. You'll wonder how your child really feels about leaving you or transitioning, going on to this new phase, whatever they're doing in their life. You'll wonder what other people think about their life choices. You'll wonder what other people think about the celebration that you had. Was it too much? Was it over the top? Was it too little? Listen, it is so much more helpful and encouraging to direct your own thoughts to what is best for your family. and trust God for wisdom to do what is best for your family, and celebrate that it looks different from someone else's family. If one kid is going to college and the other is not, those are differences to be celebrated. If one family has a big kindergarten graduation party and the other doesn't, that's okay. Those are all differences to be celebrating. And you can say, here's what our family values. Here's what our family does best. Here's how we celebrate. There's such joy in that family identity. Here's another harsh truth. You are going to mess up. It's just inevitable. You will overstep. You will understep. You will ask too much. You'll say too little. You'll assume instead of assure. You will talk instead of listening. There is such grace and restoration in humility, kindness, and compassion. It can be so hard to see things from our kids' point of view. And I'll give you an example of this. When my oldest daughter went to college and I was in town actually to work and she couldn't see me, I was trying not to be crushed. I pulled into a parking lot to do a drive-through to get some food. And who did I see but my precious little baby child right there in the parking lot? I was grateful at first, and then I got a little angry because I thought, well, she said she didn't have time to see me. And, you know, from her perspective, I left her at college without a car. She needed a ride to the library to study. The people of the library said, we're going to get food. What was she going to do? Tell her ride no, that she couldn't do that? A lot of times we just think about our own experiences. So it's really important to listen, to be empathetic. And so the other thing is that when you have a child that's in a major transition, whether they're going off to school for the first time in kindergarten, they're going to junior high, high school, they're college graduates, they're getting a new job, our other kids who are still at home, or maybe even not at home, they need to know the world is not going to fall apart when that change happens, when their sibling grows up, when they move on, that they are more than enough to give your life meaning and joy in that next season. Sometimes when we have one kid who's transitioning and doing something so different in their life that we think, oh my goodness, you know, that all of a sudden the whole world revolves around them and we forget about our other kids, and we can't do that. Here's another piece of advice. Choose grace. Let the little things go. We have to choose our battles. We cannot choose every battle and choose to be offended and upset and to make everything go. I think about the scripture that love covers a multitude of sins. And in this time where your family is maybe doing something hard, you're sending one off into the world, you're launching kids in adulthood, you just need to let the little things go. Recognize that as hard as change is for you, it is harder for our kids, even when it doesn't seem that way. So say yes as often as you can, especially when they're asking for your time. Be especially attentive to those times when they're just wanting to sit with you. They're just wanting to talk with you. And you may think, oh no, I've got so much to do. I've got to get ready for this party. I've got to order this. I've got to make this food. Just drop what you're doing and recognizing that nothing is more important than heart-to-heart conversation, that heart-to-heart connection. And that is really good. And again, as you're looking at those old pictures, remember that we are going to celebrate the seasons we've had while telling them with confidence, as good as it was, the best is yet to come. When you're looking at those old pictures of them, sometimes as parents, okay, this is going to be really sounding kind of harsh and step on some toes, but we treat them like social media where we make the pictures about me and we think what I enjoy during this season of parenting, and we tell them the story of the picture that's about me instead of telling them the picture about them. So when you look at younger pictures of your kids, think intentionally about the character traits that they were developing that you now see coming to fruition today, that you see blooming. Make it about them. So when you see a picture of them, you can say, you know, you have always walked to the beat of your own drum. When they have a picture where maybe they think they're doing something that is, you know, really funny, then you can say, I really appreciate how you stay true to your convictions no matter what anybody thinks. I saw that in you when you're five. I see that in you now. Do you know what an edification that would be to the heart of your kid to hear you say things like that? Or to say, here's you bringing me a tray for Mother's Day, instead of saying, yeah, those were such good days. I loved when you were little. Say, I see you serving this way even today. You have such a heart for service. You are so good at serving others. And here's how I see you serving others. So parents, I challenge you to look at those old pictures and to edify those character traits that your kids have. Now, this is wisdom from none other than Pooh Bear, actually. It's a quote from A.A. Milne's book. You are braver than you believe. You are stronger than you seem. You're smarter than you think, and you're loved more than you know. And sometimes that simple affirmation can be good in tough times of transition. But listen, celebrate your healthy family. Perfect families do not exist. And there's so much joy in this stage of life where you're seeing things that you have worked on for so many years and you see them coming to fruition. Now, the last thing that I want to talk to you about is resilience, because no matter what our kids are going through, we want our kids to be resilient. We want them to be confident in knowing who they are and whose they are, and to go out in a world and to live counterculturally, to live out their values, and to feel confident about that. And so we do know a lot about resilience. So I want to quickly go through the 7 C's of resilience. This is from the work of actually a pediatrician named Kenneth Ginsberg. And it is research-based to say these are the things that can help our kids navigate tough times. The first thing is confidence. Our kids need to be confident and know that they will succeed. And that's where it comes back into generalizing that behavioral trait into a character trait, that behavioral struggle into a character trait. So tell them, I believe in you. I know you can do this. I know it's hard. I know that you will learn in the process. And they might be willing to try harder and have less fear of failure and rebound from failure. So when our kids, we have to let our kids fail. Sometimes that is hard to do, but when it's safe to fail, let them fail. If they forget their lunch, don't bring it to them. They will remember to bring it. That will help build confidence. The second one is competence. They really need real skill sets to be able to navigate the world. One of the most important skill sets kids need is communication skills. They need to be able to communicate with other kids and adults around them. So help them to do that. Help them to communicate. I used to do this with my kids. One of them was shy and had a hard time saying hello. So I said, you know, we'll just stay longer after church on Sunday and let you practice those skills. And so they would practice just saying hello and making eye contact. And that was it. And it was a fun little game that we had. But we can help them to work through solutions instead of always fixing something for them immediately, instead of always finding exactly what's wrong and going in and making that okay, and not lecturing them to tell them what to do. Say, I think that you're capable of doing this for yourself. What solution would you come up with? And then guide them through it. The third one is connection. Human connection is so important. And what I see is families who are digitally connected, but relationally disconnected. So make sure that you're having some time to meaningfully connect with your kids, that you know what's going on in their heart. You know what's going on in their mind. You know their struggles. You know their celebrations. Make sure that you have those connections. The next one is character. Kids with strong core values make the strongest contributions. They have the best sense of self, and they have the most secure and healthy connections. So again, like I was talking about before, when you're looking at those pictures, call out their character, compliment their character. Next is contribution. Kids want to matter. Let them do something they think can help. When you're talking about something that's going on wrong in the world, ask them, what can you do to help? and they will surprise you and amaze you. I think of the time I cared for kids who had been involved in a school shooting. My kids wanted to send cards with me to work. It was something simple that they did that really made a difference. The next is coping. We've got to teach our kids healthy coping skills. Now look at, what are our coping skills? If you're going through a season of transition in your family and it's hard, how are you coping? With caffeine and ibuprofen? Or are you coping with prayer, with exercise, with eating healthy, with sleeping? These things are so simple, but so hard to do. And the last one is control. Knowing that we have a sense of control because God is in control. That is what gives us hope. You know, I think we'll probably come back to this topic on resilience sometime soon, because I have a lot more to say about this and I've just run out of time to talk with you. It's such a good time to be with you in the afternoon every day. Thank you so much for everything that you are doing to raise kids who love God and serve others. And I'm praying for you during this time. And we'll see you back here on Monday. And in the meantime, may the Lord bless you and keep you and make His face shine upon you and be gracious to you. And have a great weekend, everybody.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.